This is the Higher Ed Tech Podcast, Season 3, Episode 1, Interview with Dr. John Hernandez.
Welcome to today's Higher Ed Tech Podcast. I'm Tim Van Norman, the Instructional Technologist here at Irvine Valley College.
And I'm Brent Warner, professor of ESL here at IVC. We both enjoy integrating technology into the classroom, which is what this show is all about.
Welcome. We're glad you're here with us.
Yes. So season three, episode one, Tim, we made it.
Yes, we've made it two seasons in. And today we're interviewing Dr. John Hernandez, who is the president here at Irvine Valley College. We tried to get him right away when he was brand new, almost a year ago now. And just timing and other things didn't work out. He said yes, but we just couldn't make things work. And so now this is coming out just about 2 weeks before our professional development week that we'll be releasing this. So some of this, hey, as we're talking later, be sure to come to Professional Development Week if you're at Irvine Valley College, because we've got a lot of new stuff coming out. And even as I'm recording this, I just got a new update from Zoom that I'll be sharing in during Professional Development Week. I expect even more stuff because they're coming out. So Dr. Hernandez, welcome. Congratulations on getting here almost a year in.
Almost.
It has been a pleasure getting to know you and learn about you in this last year, even though it's been pandemic. So you probably feel like you haven't even started yet to a certain extent because you haven't gotten to see everybody on campus. But you started back basically August 1st of 2020. And so 10 months ago, you've learned a lot. You've taught us a lot. And so we just wanted to get to know you a little bit and see what, how we can contribute to what you're doing, and stuff like that. So welcome.
Thank you, Tim and Brent. I appreciate it. I know that our best efforts did not allow us to come together sooner, but early summer was certainly an ideal time, as things do tend to slow down a little bit. And you're correct, it's going to be almost I'm coming up on my first year anniversary. I don't know that I ever imagined onboarding into a key leadership role in a virtual environment in the middle of a pandemic, but certainly given that we were all, you know, dealing with the same set of circumstances, I think we really did a phenomenal job of just connecting with one another, creating community in virtual spaces. It doesn't ever fully replicate the in-person interactions, but having been on campus, you know, on average twice a week, getting to meet individuals randomly. As you know, we had so many drive-through events, and that provided opportunities to connect with students, to hear their stories, to meet faculty and staff. I feel very fortunate that even though a lot of those interactions were in a virtual space, that I've had small opportunities to meet individuals in person. And that has, I think, helped me prepare for fall, thinking that I'm not having to reintroduce myself from scratch. And Brent knows this because I saw him walking by my office and I ran outside because I wanted to make sure I at least had the opportunity to meet in person. And that's kind of been how the experience has been this past year. But I will just say that I've come to have a greater appreciation and respect for all the infrastructure and support that we've provided each other in order to successfully work from remote and to learn in a remote environment. And certainly, you know, I've appreciated both of your leaderships in your respective areas. So anyway, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you, Dr. Hernandez. I was I saw you there. You were working when that day I walked by your office, and I'm like, oh, there's Dr. Hernandez. And then I was just trying to wave to say hello because I thought you were busy, and then you came running out. So it was nice. I'm glad that we did get to meet in person briefly. I'm sure we'll have more opportunities in the future. One of the setups that we were trying to do to talk to you, we want to talk a little bit about you personally and kind of your history and a little bit of your thoughts around IVC. And then we also were hoping, because I think it's going to be interesting for a lot of people to kind of understand not you as Dr. John Hernandez, but you as a community college president, some perspectives on bigger issues as well that maybe sometimes people say, well, why do these types of decisions happen? And so we're going to try and go into both areas. And so please feel free to clarify if you're saying this isn't really me, but this is kind of how systems work. And so if there's anything that's unclear with that, please feel free to share. But let's start with you personally. So can you tell us a little bit about you and your history and what brought you to IVC?
Certainly. Thank you. I guess it depends how far back I'm going, but just to provide a general, background. I have lived in this country since the age of 7. My parents immigrated from Cuba, and grew up in Southern California, attended local schools here, local community college, my local Cal State for my bachelor's and master's. Somewhere in my community college experience, I was not sure what I wanted to pursue, what I wanted to do. And I was very fortunate to have had just incredible opportunities to meet individuals at my community college, to work as a student ambassador, things that ultimately guided me to education and specifically student affairs and then administration. So my past 15 years, I was at the other local community college up the toll road, Santiago Canyon College. Spent 15 years there, 11 as a vice president, and then the last 4 as college president. So when I saw the opportunity had opened up at Irvine Valley College, I was intrigued. I'll be honest. I you know, made a couple calls. I talked to some folks, was trying to do my research, my due diligence. And before I share what attracted me to IVC, I think I just wanted to say that as a first generation immigrant, my experience and the focus that my family, my parents specifically had on education, and the importance of an education as the means to a better life and economic mobility was something that I think still shapes and influences how I view our role as educators. And similar to a lot of immigrant students, when we pursue the education route, we know we're doing it to improve our lives, but more often than not, we're doing it as a repayment of debt to our parents who sacrificed so much to, you know, to have come to this country. And so I know that for me, that continues, I think, to reinforce why I love what I do, why this is my vocational calling, and ultimately understanding the tremendous impact we have in changing lives through our learning and educational institutions. So first and foremost, I think that is embedded in like my core, and it certainly, I think, impacts and influences how I try to lead and you know, the focus that I give every day. Irvine Valley is an institution I've always known from a distance. There were a lot of reasons. When I saw the question, I thought, oh, I think I was asked that during the open forum when I was a candidate. So I was trying to remember the primary reasons that I gave then, because I think they hold true today. First and foremost, IVC has a solid institutional reputation, and it's a well-established, comprehensive college. It certainly has a high level of visibility within its community. I was so impressed when I started doing the research to look at the student progress and achievement data of students. You know, so for example, completion and persistent rates here are higher than the statewide average. And as I started digging a little deeper with some of the data I was able to access, I thought, okay, well, they either have a high talented pool of students, and that explains why their achievement data is so well and so strong, or, and this is where I now a year later know this is really the case, there truly is an institutional commitment in a culture that values student success. And that is so powerful, because when that is embedded in how we view our roles as individuals, but also collectively as a community, it cannot but help shape the environment that our students interact in. So that, I think, was first and foremost. Probably tied for number one was the institutional's commitment to student equity and inclusion. That was clearly articulated in the revised mission statement, that it's part of our identity. It was the first goal in the college's most recently revised strategic plan to ensure student equity in access and achievement, which is meaningful because access alone is not enough. We have to create environments that ensures that every single student has the potential to achieve. And so even looking, frankly, through the job announcement, it was very clear that this community was looking for a leader to help move us further into creating those inclusive spaces on our college campus. And then related to that, student diversity, you know, it is such a diverse college community in terms of ethnicity, race, socioeconomic status, first generational students. We're a Asian American, Native American, Pacific Islander, and a PC serving institution. Our Latinx percentage of students in a couple years will be eligible to also reach Hispanic serving institution status. So those were all, I think, primary reasons. And then not the least of which is that my community college experience has been in a multi-college district. I came from the younger, smaller college, and I know the growing pains of having an older sister and knowing what that feels like. And at the same time, understanding that in a multi-college district, there's a lot of synergy that we can leverage. And yet, you know, successfully leading in that environment, I think requires familiarity with the dynamics that happen in a multi-college district. And then I'll stop here, because I'm sure there were a lot of other reasons. I alluded to the job announcement. The job announcement, it struck me, because I don't always see these characteristics embedded in a announcement for a college president, but looking for someone who is an engaged leader, who fosters collaboration, who has a student-centered focus, who's committed to equity, inclusion, social justice, being present and visible. I mean, those are all personal and professional characteristics that are completely congruent with how I have led in other places that I've been. So knowing that that was a quality that the community was looking for was also, I think, an attraction, if you will.
Wow, you set the bar pretty high. it feels like we're going, okay, wow. Now that you've been here for 10 months, what have you learned? And have we fulfilled some of those expectations and stuff like that? And so what is your take now that you've been here for a little while?
No, that's a great question, Tim. it's almost like saying, did your expectations meet the reality of the campus community? Absolutely, it did. First and foremost, I've attempted and been very intentional in creating virtual, because of the pandemic, virtual spaces to connect with individuals, virtual chats, meet and greets. And I have come to appreciate and value a level of dedication among our employees. And as I said, this commitment to student success, there's a deep sense of pride to be part of the IVC family, the IVC organization. It's a beautiful campus, absolutely. And I've always said this, it's wonderful when we have facilities like, you know, first rate facilities that you know, give an initial impression of who we are. But the facilities is the shell of who we are. The people that reside within that shell, to me, is the soul of the institution. And so in so many ways, I've had an opportunity to affirm or validate that there is a strong commitment and care to IBC, which is wonderful. There is a genuine desire to work on building trust and caring relationships across the college. And I know that when I've never taken that for granted, because I know when you lose that, it's very hard to regain. But there's this renewed sense of optimism that we have an opportunity to mend, to heal, and to restore trust. I think also there's a very strong desire and commitment to transparency and shared decision making. And I've worked very deliberatively to ensure that, for example, our college, what will now be our college council, the new name in the coming year, truly becomes the hub for major decision making, and that the membership proportionately represents the constituents. It wasn't that way when I first arrived, and it was a little surprising about it. And then lastly, there truly is, and I've already alluded to this, but I have learned this in the past 10 months, a true genuine commitment to student equity and inclusion. And there's this sense that we're poised to really move forward in a proactive way. And so the groundwork has been laid, and it's exciting. Maybe I'll have an opportunity to share a little bit down the road here on what we're gonna do next year around diversity, equity, and inclusion. But people are ready, and they're engaged. And I guess lastly, I just have felt so welcomed and embraced, and it just feels like people have been genuinely appreciative of my engaging leadership style, which is wonderful, because that's how I like to lead. And so it's been wonderful. I feel blessed. I say that all the time. I'm so thankful and honored to be here.
Well, I think now is a great time to take that conversation, because you're saying, hey, I've been able to kind of ramp up, get my feet on the ground here, get yourself settled in, and it takes some time to get your head wrapped around an organization, no matter what, when you're stepping in. But now we're shifting somewhat back to on campus. We've got mixed things going on, but we've definitely got an interesting future coming up this semester and in the upcoming years. So I think we should just step right into that. Like, what are you looking forward to accomplishing, and what are your goals for IVC?
Thank you, Brent. That's an excellent question. One of the things I'm often maybe perplexed sometimes when you're new someplace, people tend to ask, "What's your vision for our college?" And I get where that question comes from. It's an important question, but I think it's also needs to be reframed because yes, I better have a vision and I hope I have a blueprint or a goal of where I'd like to see the institution going, but it isn't the college president's vision. It has to be a collective institutional vision. And so, you know, when we talk about, you know, goals and things I'd like to accomplish, first, let me just say that IVC has a revised strategic plan, a 5-year plan, 2020 to 2025. So I certainly want to engage actively with the campus community in achieving the 4 overarching goals of our strategic plan. We have a fairly new facilities master plan, which is moving really well in creating a sense of where we're headed with our facilities. We're in the midst of developing a technology master plan. We certainly have board goals that relate to the system-wide vision for success. So first, let me say that those are like the broader set of goals that as an institution, we have spent an incredible amount of time producing these documents and putting a lot of thought and energy to really ask the question, who do we want to be? And so I want to value and affirm the work that went into developing those documents, because they're not just a document that you put on a shelf. It is a roadmap for where we want to be and where we ought to be headed. So first and foremost, but having said that, it's very timely because I'm working this summer. I will be working on my self-evaluation, and part of the self-evaluation, of course, is setting out goals for the coming year or years. But there are three that I thought I would, you know, share out with you. The first, of course, is launching the President's Advisory Council on Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, which is a new entity that is going to be fully launched this coming fall. The role of the council is to help advise me on strategies to design and implement diversity, equity, and inclusion goals here at IVC. It is also intended to help coordinate a college-wide equity framework to ensure that we're aligning everything that we do. One of the first things I did notice is there's a lot of good work happening around this. And a lot of it was very organic. It's happening with faculty, with classified staff, with student-focused equity initiatives. But I wanted to be able to align it and pull it all under an umbrella, if you will, under a particular framework. And so that, I think this coming year, we're going to have an opportunity. I just had a meeting, in-person meeting yesterday with the 3 tri-chairs who are going to lead that council yesterday. There's a lot of excitement to move forward. We spent a lot of time, as I think I alluded earlier, understanding, being educated, being trained, and now people are just ready to roll up their sleeves and begin some action-oriented deliverables. So that's one of my primary goals. The other, and I think I've mentioned this in passing, but it seems to me that we need to have a concentrated conversation about reimagining the future of career education at Irvine Valley College. And let me expand on that a little bit. We clearly are a transfer destination. Students primarily come to IVC with the educational objective to transfer. And we do that probably better than most. And I only say that because we have bragging rights on number one transfer rates to the UC, campuses, to the CSU. Consistently, we rank very high in transfer. So we have a very strong transfer mission. Where I feel like there is room to grow And the conversation should never be framed in the either or, because I believe we should be both, is expanding instruction and career training, particularly for adult learners. And that's where my heart is, because not every single community member, and we are a community college, and that's part of our role, is to serve our local community, is interested necessarily in coming to transfer to pursue a baccalaureate or graduate preparation. And when I look at some of the data, particularly in the city of Tustin surrounding ATEP, you know, with some of the lowest rates of educational attainment beyond high school, I think something like 54% of our service area residents are working age adults. And yet only about 10% of our enrollment or our instruction is for non-credit students. And that's predominantly in adult ESL. And you know that very well, Brent, because that's your discipline and your department, which, by the way, I had no idea until I got here what an incredible ASL program IBC has. But I have always also felt that we need to leverage language acquisition with career training, because language acquisition alone is not sufficient to compete in today's job market. That requires additional training, retraining, especially for those middle skill jobs. So I feel that that is something we should truly explore and spend some time just thinking about what our vision is for career education in general, but specifically as it relates to adult learners. And to me, that is, I believe, that is a need. And so I'm going to work on creating a dialogue, a framework, so that we can, have the conversation and look at the data, assess what the community needs are, and possibly create a pathway for how we do that. The other thing as I'm learning a little bit more about the community of Irvine, which again is new for me, because my focus had been in the Orange area before, that a very large percentage, according to at least the 2017 census, I don't know about the new one, I suspect it may even be higher, that a very large percentage, almost 40% of Irvine residents were born outside of the United States, which is higher than the national average. So there's a reason our adult ESL program, and you know this, Brent, has such high demand for English as a second language. So anyway, I think that's an area that needs renewed focus. And then the other, which I know I've had a conversation with Brent about, and I think it aligns very nicely with the focus of your podcast, is assessing what online education will look like at IBC post-pandemic. I think we have an incredible opportunity to learn and to retain the best of what worked well for our faculty and for our students in the midst of a global pandemic. But I just do not believe, and I believe really strongly about this, that we can hit the reset button and go back to pre-pandemic, when I believe we were only offering about 18% of our course offerings through distance education.
we talk about this a lot. So I talk about this with Cheryl Bailey, who's co-chair of the Online Education Task Force with me, and we're saying, well, there's some people who imagine that it's going to be the same going back, but there's no possible way that that's going to be the case. And we're starting to see that with interesting enrollments too, right?
Yeah. And you know what encourages me as I continue to have my meet and greets, which basically are no agenda. It's just an opportunity for me to get to know faculty and others. And I probably have had over 50 of those so far, and I'm getting through the last of the list, which are the department chairs and co-chairs. What is encouraging to me is individuals from disciplines, and I know because it was that way in my former institution, who prior to the pandemic were, hell no, I'm not going to teach online. And the pandemic pushed us all, right, outside of whatever comfort zone we had and into a discomfort zone. And many of those folks now are like, oh, I can do this. And not only that, but I think I can create it and set it up in a way that I feel like my students are more engaged. Certainly access, which I think is a critical, you know, point of students being able to access classes. And so for me, it isn't just about how many more courses can we put in a distance ed environment, but can a student actually complete a degree and transfer primarily online? People are going to get tired of hearing this one anecdotal story, but I want to share it with you because it's relevant. At one of the spring EOPS drive-through events, like I do at most of these, and I've made it a point to be at every single one this past year, it gave me an opportunity to randomly talk to students from the safety and comfort of their vehicle and just to ask, like, how's it going? What has this been like for you? What's missing? What's working? And the last drive-through event, I had a conversation with a 26-year-old student who shared with me that she did not come right out of high school. And by the way, when you look at the demographics at IBC, I think only like 15% of our student population now is that traditional student that comes right out of high school. So she probably represents the majority of our students today. And so she took a break right out of high school. She came back, single parent. And I'll be honest, I was expecting a very different response. She said, it's been so good. I've actually been able to take more classes online and make progress towards my degree completion in a way that I never would have prior to the pandemic. Well, guess what? I know she was an N of one, but I think in my gut that that is true for so many other students. And so not only do we have to be responsive, because that's what our students need and are looking for in order to make the dream of completing an education possible, but let's be self-serving for a minute, because if we don't, others will, and we are going to lose them to those institutions, those other community colleges that are making it feasible for students to complete their education in a timely manner, because the reality is the majority of our students are working 20 plus hours. The percentage of students who are working 30 plus is extremely high. Not surprisingly, they're juggling multiple life commitments. And, you know, that's what's going to work. So I'm encouraged with faculty who I believe, I hope, are going to continue to provide meaningful education and interaction in an online platform. And then, as I know Brent and Cheryl and I have talked about, is truly assessing. We have a unique opportunity to say, to answer the question, the what could be, and assess where we are, where we think we want to go, and then what infrastructure do we need to put in place to get us there? And so I am just hopeful that this fall semester, I think we're starting to have, obviously we're going to have some on ground and hybrid. The majority of our fall is still primarily online. But as we transition to spring, I really hope we have these intentional conversations that help us be responsive and sensitive to student needs, while at the same time addressing the concerns, the professional development needs, the instructional design needs of faculty, who I think if we make those tools and that process, one that embraces this new modality that hopefully more and more faculty will want to consider that.
Those are excellent points. And, you know, you can imagine as an instructional technologist, I'm loving hearing a lot of that. And by the way,
we saw Tim walking around our campus with a big smile, like after teachers started going, I can do this, I can do this. And Tim's like,
yeah. Yes. And absolutely. It was good to see. And it continues to be good to see. I love the growth that I'm seeing in a lot of faculty, as you mentioned, realize going from I'm never going to be teaching online to I can do this. Mm-hmm. And some people are at various stages in there, but a lot of people have revised their view, even at least a little bit, which has been, that's always good. You know, when you're stuck in one view, it's always a bad thing. So that said, are you seeing a desire by staff to do that same thing and maybe not be on campus as much? And does that, is that encouraging, or are you finding that to be, what are you finding if you are seeing a desire by staff as well?
What I will say is that we seem to be more effectively reaching students. And again, virtual appointments, virtual counseling sessions, virtual workshops, you know, group advising. So I suspect that, just all the different, let alone all the different tools and software that we have for, you know, students being able to do live chat and for us to just be able to communicate more efficiently and effectively with students. I don't think that's going to go away either. I actually think that we are going to retain elements of that. It will not replace the opportunity for face-to-face appointments, face-to-face events, but I think our classified professionals are starting to assess, like, how do we in a commuter campus, where in the past we had this event and maybe it drew 10, 15 people, but now we've had it in a virtual space and we have 80 to 100. You know, the Brent, I'm blanking on the event we had, which was the CTE, virtual CTE day. I forget what it was actually called. And just the number of students who participated in that versus what would have normally been, you know, an okay turnout in person. So I also think that we're all having that conversation. I will say that in one of my faculty virtual chats and in one of my management leadership meetings, we did have a conversation and we had breakout rooms to talk about what are those things that have worked really well for us in this COVID environment and how do we retain that moving forward? So I don't think that happens unless you create a space and an intentional dialogue to chat about it, to plan about it, and to be responsive to it.
Yeah.
To that point, and I, sorry, as we were talking before, we might step on each other. To that point, and I agree with you, Dr. Hernandez, one of the things I have found is I was visiting lots of people at their desk before the pandemic, and in doing Zoom, if somebody's late to a meeting, instead of being dead time for me, I'm actually getting work done. So yes, I intend to keep some of those types of things to just exactly to your point. I love how you put that. So, and I'm seeing a lot of people who are thinking that way. What can I pull out of this horrible time, but it's actually turning into a positive, or at least a time where people are learning something that it would have taken a long time to learn.
Absolutely. And I think going back to professional development and the importance and need to constantly refresh our skills to help us learn a new tool, that, I think we did that. We had no choice, right? I mean, we were forced to do that and try to do it as best we could in a very short turnaround. But I believe that we're going to be much proactive in thinking about those needs and then providing for that professional development in turn.
Absolutely. So Dr. Hernandez, kind of in some respect of time, and well, there's a lot of different areas we could take these conversations, but there is one area that we wanted to spend a little bit more time just kind of getting your thoughts and your perspective on, which was you already started talking about it with the DEI movements and the changes that you're going. You're known as being a strong advocate for equity on campus. And I guess we just want to kind of dig into that a little bit for why it's personal for you. Why is it so close to your heart, and what does it mean for you?
Yeah, thank you. That's such a important question. Because when you feel passionate about something, there's usually a drive behind that passion. I did share a little bit at the opening about my own journey as a first gen immigrant. But as I think about even other ways that I identify as a Latinx, cisgender, gay man, it's part of my lived experience. And it has been part of my lived experience to the point that I can look back and see how there were times where I did not feel fully embraced and welcomed in certain spaces. There were times where I didn't necessarily have a place at the table. There were times where I would enter educational spaces and look around and wonder why there weren't more people that look like me in these spaces. In this day and age, it still surprises me. And yet I realize that we're making slow progress when anyone in any particular leadership role becomes the first, you know, the first female president in the college's, you know, 90-year history, or the first person of color, or the first openly gay or LGBTQ, you know, leader. I just remembered my first month here. I received a random email from a student, happened to have the same last name as I did, who saw the banner on the website welcoming me as the new college president. And kudos for this student to take the time to write an email and to send it to the generic IVC president email account to say, I saw that you're the new president, and I'm getting emotional talking about it. Who said, you know, I've never seen or known a college president who is also comes from a similar background, who happens to have my same last name. And it's motivated me further to pursue my educational goals. And if that isn't powerful enough, as a drive and a passion to really intentionally review, the reality is when you look at the past history of higher education, for whom it was designed, and how higher ed has often not been an open, welcoming place for students, particularly from underserved, minoritized groups. It is incumbent, not just because of the demographic shifts in our community and in our state, But it just becomes, I think, incumbent as an imperative, as a moral imperative, that we ensure and that we be intentional about reviewing whether it's a practice, a policy. Sometimes things historically were created to be exclusive. Sometimes things are created with the best intentions and best of efforts that have nevertheless unintended consequences. And to be mindful and thoughtful so that every single student who enters our doors feels fully embraced, welcomed, never questions their sense of belonging, and that students can see themselves in others, in the curriculum, in the classroom. And so to me, this work of creating environments where all students succeed, you know, there was a time in higher ed where you would hear things like, well, you know, I don't know if this experience is for you, or a lot of deficit minded thinking and words. And I have just come to understand that it's not on the student, it's on us as educators to redesign our environments in a way that ensures that every single student can and will be successful. So when you see goals at the Vision for Success statewide, and even in the IBC strategic plan that says we plan to eliminate all achievement gaps, that is a lofty goal. Will we ever get there? I don't know. But why should we say, oh, we want to close it by 5%? Like, to me, that's not sufficient. So I guess to summarize, the reason it is, you know, I feel strongly and my corazón, my heart is so embedded in this work, is because our students are depending on us. And if not us, who? And if not now, when? And so I had a faculty member, my former institution, who used to be the Senate president. I shared this yesterday with the tri-chairs, probably paid me one of the highest compliments that I feel I could have received from a faculty member, who said when I was leaving, you know, I never felt working with you that student equity was a box that you felt you had to check off, but it always felt like you fully like embraced and engaged yourself in helping us have the conversation to really think about how we recreate our learning spaces for students. And that's what I'd like in an ideal world, if I could make a wish, was that's the same kind of passion I hope every community member of IVC would feel. That this isn't just, you know, the flavor of the month, of the year, a box to check off, but that we want to live and breathe this in a way that becomes action-oriented and really gets us where we need to be.
That's really great, Dr. Hernandez. We appreciate you sharing all of that. I think this is a great place for us to kind of wrap up here, and just wanted to give you a chance if there's anything that you wanted to share with IVC faculty, staff, or maybe even any students who might listen in.
You know, the only thing I'll just add is that this past year and a half has been one that I'm sure at some point in our lifetime we're going to look back on and maybe laugh, or, you know, just say, wow, what was that? But I also feel that it has tested and affirmed our ability to truly be responsive And I hope that as difficult as that was, and I know that, you know, we've used terms like, oh, we've learned to be more nimble and flexible. And I hope, frankly, that those are like attributes that help us as we move forward to be just as nimble and flexible and adaptable in the face of changing perspectives, changing realities, and just to know that this institution, particularly as a caring campus, just has such an incredible role to play. And I try to thank individuals, and when I'm in spaces, thank whether it's faculty, staff, administrators, and certainly when I connect with students, but just to thank individuals for their efforts, for their good work. And I'm really looking forward to helping redefine what we look like in a post-pandemic world. And I think it looks bright. I frankly do. And just looking forward to be engaged with others in defining what that looks like for us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I loved seeing your passion in some of these. I wish that this was recorded live and people could actually see your face because you demonstrated that this wasn't just words that you were giving. There was a true passion behind what you were talking about. And thank you for your time and for sharing that with us.
My pleasure. Thank you both.
Thank you for listening today. In this episode, we interviewed Dr. Hernandez, president of Irvine Valley College. For more information about this show, please visit our website at thehigheredtechpodcast.com. There you will find our podcasts and links to the information we've covered.
As always, we want to know your feedback, so please go to thehigheredtechpodcast.com and let us know your thoughts. If you have ideas for future shows, there's a link on the page where you can give us some of your topic ideas.
For everyone at IVC that is listening, if you need help with technology questions, please contact IVC Technical Support at extension 5696 or by emailing ivctech@ivc.edu. If you have questions about technology in your classroom, please contact me, Tim Van Norman, at tvannorman@ivc.edu.
And if you want to reach out to me about the show, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Brent G. Horner.
I'm Tim Van Norman.
And I'm Brent Warner, and we hope this episode has helped you on the road from possibility to actuality. Have a good one, everybody.